Welcome to the Profile Podcast. God calls us to use our influence to share his love and goodness. For some, this is in leadership. I'm Andy Peck, and for the past 19 years, I've been interviewing Christians to find out how to lead better. Taking the initiative isn't always easy, so I hope you'll benefit from this latest conversation. The Profile Podcast is brought to you by Premier Christianity Magazine. Subscribe today and get full online access and the print magazine every month at premierchristianity.com. Anyone who is given training prior to adopting children will be introduced to attachment theory. This is a way of understanding human development in terms of the care received in early years, which form norms in our inner world. The theory helps us understand what is often missing in the young lives of those who go into care and in time up for adoption. Adoptive parents need to understand this so they can care appropriately. If this sounds a strange topic to introduce a leadership show, let's be clear that in truth, none of us had perfect parents. And for many of us, trauma or insecurity in the early years leads to a way of living and relating that impacts the way we lead others. In extreme cases, a leader may be unable to cope or succumb to various temptations that lead them to stepping down from their role. Well, I'm delighted today to be joined by a husband and wife who've co-written a book based on their own experiences growing up and their ministry to leaders in need of support. The book is called Healing Leadership Trauma, Finding Emotional Health and Helping Others Flourish, published by IVP. The authors are Nicholas Rowe and Sheila Wise Rowe. Both are now based in the USA, though Nicholas was born in the UK to West Indian parents who moved as part of the Windrush generation to the UK before emigrating to the US. I look forward to exploring this key topic so we can better understand our own leadership styles and those we lead with. So welcome, Nicholas. Welcome, Sheila, to the Leadership Show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, absolutely.
So my first question is, what led you to this topic? I mean, it's a big theme to write a book about. What led you there?
Wow. You know, I think that a lot of it's just our experiences in life and in ministry, and particularly in our work with emerging and established leaders. There were many things that we witnessed from afar, but also in the sessions that we had with leaders, that we saw that there was a gap in terms of meeting some of the deeper heartfelt needs of leaders.
Anything to add to this?
Yeah, well, I think there's a sense in which this book represents an intersection of both our areas of specialty. So, you know, Sheila does have a clinical background, a therapist by training. I am a seminary professor. Professor of leadership at Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary in the United States, where as part of the work of the preparing folks for ministry, and it's not just pastors and seminarians and the like, but also for Christian workers, wherever God assigns them, part of the dimensions of leadership, many of the dimensions of leadership are things that we discuss. And so, particularly as we're looking at a lot of issues of leadership crises these days, we see that that's a definite challenge to the Christian community. And there's been a lot of very salacious stories going about leadership crises. And since this is an area that both of us are deeply concerned with and where our passions and our vocations intersect, we thought it was timely to have a discussion about that. Particularly based on our own experiences, but definitely in terms of where we see a really big need in the church right now.
I wanted to add just one thing. Also, from my perspective, many of 30 plus years as a clinician, so working as a therapist in Christian as well as secular settings. And in that context, Nick and I also, there was a group that we ran that dealt with inner healing, emotional healing. And in those contexts, we also witnessed leaders who came because they had gotten to a point in their lives where all of the struggles, the things that they had ascribed other motives to, like it was the problem was the work, or the problem was they don't get along with their wife. And yet they come to this point of recognizing there's something going on internally within themselves that needed to be addressed. And so they came for counseling or they participated in our groups. And so that also contributed to our writing this book.
Thank you. I mean, in our time together, we can just really scratch the surface. I'm hoping this will help people to realize maybe they need to do some more reading and thinking. And obviously, they would be pointed towards your book. So we need to unpack some of the words that I used in my introduction, such as attachment, styles of relating, and that kind of thing. Perhaps you could explain a little bit more what we mean by, or how you understand attachment theory. I know there's different approaches to attachment theory. There's Bowlby and others who've written on this. And maybe reflect a little bit on, to try and earth things, maybe on your own life or the lives of others, obviously with an anonymity to talk through. So I don't know who wants to start with that.
Yeah. Well, you hit the nail on the head. Bowlby was one of the first. There were some predecessors as well who dealt with issues about how are children formed, emotionally, even intellectually to a certain extent, but how are lives of children, babies initially, and then going to childhood and adolescence, et cetera. What is the impact of some of that very early developmental, the interactions with parents, and what are the seeds of a secure attachment? And by that, this sense that the baby knows that mom, dad are there for them, their consistent care they receive, they're not giving more responsibility than they need to have for their age. And they have even the sense of objects permanence, like parents can go away, but then they're going to come back. And so there's that consistent care. And you mentioned adoption, and oftentimes children who've been adopted, that's not what they received. There's been inconsistency of care, or they've actually been removed from the home. So there's this sense of what can develop for a child who doesn't experience that secure attachment, is that there can be this avoidant attachment, which is just this pressure that this child just feels like, I don't know if I can actually depend on anyone. I don't know if I can ask for help. We often see that there's these leaders who are very charismatic, and even the toxic ones who try to present a front like, you know, they have it all together. But there's a way in which there's an avoidant, insecure attachment where there's that underlying fear. Then you have ambivalent, anxious attachment. And these are the people who there's a lot of anxiety around relationships that eventually this person is going to leave, or the staff person is going to leave, or can I really trust that the person is going to consistently be there for me. And then you have disorganized attachment, which is a little bit of both, anxious and also insecure, in that you have this leader, may feel like I don't know, I'm anxious, and yet there's an insecurity about it. There are actually maybe some elements of secure attachment for that person as well. And so you see these traits in various individuals, period, in their relationships, but you also see it in terms of how leaders function.
I mean, we talk in the book about different scenarios of leaders with different types of attachment styles and how that manifests itself in terms of his leadership. I mean, we talk about a character named Carlos, for instance, in the book, and particularly his avoidant attachment and how it manifested itself in him trying to run an entire show. But we know about other types of avoidant attachment styles that lead to people who just don't want to deal with conflict, right? And you've had leaders who are just conflict avoidant, and so the organization is going around in circles because the leaders are afraid to make a decision, right? Because he's afraid he'll make somebody upset. And then we have all sorts of discordance because of that. So there's a definite connection between how leadership is shaped by a person's particular attachment.
In my early days of, early months of hosting this show, I interviewed a leader who had a breakdown and delved into some of this material and had subsequently gone on to do some mentoring and coaching. And he said in over 200 leaders that he'd worked with, nobody led out of anything different from their upbringing. In other words, how they were brought up had a direct correlation to how they led. But I thought, wow, that was quite an insight. You use the word trauma in the title of your book.
Yes.
Typically, this could be obviously unpleasant events that have a marked impact, but also trauma from what we did not receive, which we should have received. Yes. You know, so a gap as well. Perhaps you could explain that word and how trauma especially manifests in leadership styles.
Yeah. There's just from a psychological perspective, what they call big T traumas and little T traumas.
Okay.
And so the big T traumas can be really horrific. The, you know, we're seeing in LA, the wildfires.
Yeah.
That's like on a global scale, but within in a house, a big T trauma could be that the house burned down. Like your personal property, or you lost someone in that, something very, very traumatic. And then there are these little T traumas. They're not as dramatic, but they're emotionally painful experiences that, you know, across the board, you wouldn't just normalize it and just say everybody would experience this type of trauma the same. But needless to say, for the individual, it was a trauma. What they've seen is that it's the significance of the big T traumas and yes, the little T traumas, but also there are these little small things that happen cumulatively that actually have shown to have even a greater impact because they are consistent and they keep happening time and time again. And the reality with trauma, and one of the stories that we share in the book is about Grace, who is a level one trauma nurse, head nurse, very competent, et cetera. And she has this encounter with a patient where there suddenly is this awareness that she's giving care and very tender care to this patient. It taps into and triggers memories of her growing up and how much her family was impacted by the trauma that the violence within her home and how she had in many ways, compartmentalize that. She didn't come off as the angry person, but it was more around her really struggling with, am I worthy of care? As she's giving care to someone else, that there's this underlying belief that she tapped into that she actually believes, like, am I really worthy of care? And so because that was a question, she was driven in her work. And so to get to the point where she realized that she needed help, that it took a long time to get to that place. And I think most of us would early on, we had to compartmentalize. We needed to do that to survive as children. And the problem is that we continue to operate from that child space and in terms of how we function as adults in our leadership roles.
Nicholas, you mentioned the crises that surround some individuals. Sadly, on Premier Christian News, we have stories from time to time, almost every week, of leaders who've had infidelity. Maybe there's been a power problem. Maybe there's been financial irregularity. Understanding attachment and trauma doesn't exonerate sinful behavior, but it does help explain, and perhaps particularly for people in church who think in crumbs, how can that godly leader who preaches wonderful messages go off the rails so fast? Maybe you could speak a little bit to that.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think one dimension that is very, very important is discipleship, right? You know, when people become believers and then they enter into the community of the fellowship and then they start to grow in the faith, I wonder how much attention is really being paid to the early parts of life that really need addressing and healing. We talk in the gospel about the things that that save us from our sins, and often we talk about that in a very abstract way, right? You know, sin and the bad things we do and everything else that's happening in the present. But the gospel also speaks to the complete restoration of the whole person. And I think in a lot of discipleship contexts, we don't address all the stuff that we picked up in the past before we came to Christ. That's still a big part of our formation. And even those who grew up in the church, not realizing that we grow up in families, those are the faces of our first and immediate formation, but no family is perfect. There's always going to be gaps in the scaffolding that's necessary as we grow from infanthood into adulthood. And so, if those places are not addressed one way or the other, they will come out. And so I think one of what we are experiencing now with the crisis of leadership is the is just the assumption that people can just walk into leadership simply because you've been around for a while and, well, hey, he looks like a nice guy and he's got a competent set of skills. I mean, if you go into any airport, when you talk about leadership and everything else like that, the book is always about methods and techniques, not about the person of the leader. And the person of the leader is just as important as methods and techniques. If the person himself has all these unresolved issues of healing and trauma, as Sheila has talked about, they will kill method and technique any day. It's a rip off of something about culture eating expertise for lunch in the business realm. Well, formation and discipleship, bad formation and bad formation and sort of bad sort of internal systems and everything else will chew up methods and techniques any day. And you can see the manifestations of it right now. If we're not attending to the person, who we are as a person, then it affects what we do as people. And so perhaps it's maybe the a call for greater attention than we, as we talk about discipleship, about what God needs to do to heal us on the inside to become more conformed to the image of Christ, which is what our discipleship should be about.
Can I just add another point in that? I also feel like there's almost a kind of a basic surface kind of vulnerability or accountability that is now kind of being pushed forward, where the accountability, it is assumed that the person is being vulnerable or they're being accountable because to whatever degree they're confessing to something. The reality, though, is that it's the next step beyond confessing is repentance. And it means turning into the going into the opposite direction and having the people, the Nathans, the whoever, who are going to call you out, call us out when we're continuing in things. And so some of these falls that we're seeing are people would say, well, he was accountable to me, or she was accountable to me. And she told me things and we prayed, and yet they continued in that. Real deep accountability is sometimes hard. It's a hard calling out, but it's a calling out to call forth. And so that is absolutely essential that, you know, when we're encountering someone who hasn't dealt with their past attachment issues, it's now bleeding it all over the place, that it is significant and essential that we say, you need to stop. You need to pause. You need to stop. And you need to go and get a deeper healing. Deeper healing needs to happen for however long that it takes. And 2 weeks is not going to be enough. And so it is so important that as leaders that there is discipleship, there's accountability, but there also and transparency, but there needs to be that deeper accountability and calling forth.
There's obviously, to some extent, we're able to train people for ministry and, you know, with the skills and the theological understanding. I appreciate theological colleges and Bible colleges don't have the time and necessarily the expertise to do this internal work. But clearly it needs to be done at the preparation level, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it's much harder, and it's not impossible, to intervene when someone's in, quotes, ministry and discovering problems. I don't know what the solutions are. Maybe you maybe you have some.
Yeah.
Well, actually working at a seminary, I'll tell you this, and it's not just the one where I work. I think a lot of seminaries these days, they're realizing that preparation for ministry is not just, you know, knowing deep theology very well. It's the whole person, right? And so, you know, not only it's the mind, and not only it's the skills, but it's also the soul as well. And so there must be an intentionality about formation in the full sense of the word. And this is something I'm pretty passionate about. I mean, just the ways in which we work, we exist in community, and to allow the Holy Spirit to work through the community, the Christian community we are a part of, to form and shape us, right, to be more like Christ. And that means having to deal with these things of the past. I would advocate that that's a necessary part of ministry formation now. It's not just packing on a bunch of skills to a guy who looks like he's a pretty decent guy. If there is not that regular practice, as Sheila has mentioned, of rigorous, honest accountability as part of Christian disciplines and practice in everyone's lives, then that's a concern in terms of future preparation for ministry. I should also say, too, that we also need to subject the culture, the outside culture that we're a part of, in terms of how organizations operate and run, in which it's very tempting to elevate some great man of God or a person of God like that and think that they are somehow above the challenges of the world, the flesh, and the devil, right? We have evil, we have an opposition that seeks to take us out, every single one of us. And pastors and leaders are of no exception. And so they need prayers on an ongoing basis. But there also just needs to be a realization, according to Jesus' model, that we are servants first, right? Every leader has to be a servant first. You know, every servant is accountable somewhere, some way, or somehow. And to walk in that humility is also very, very critical.
I was going to ask the question, guys, how would someone listening assess whether they need some therapeutic help? Because often we have blind spots. We have no idea this is how we're coming across to others. And people actually, you know, can very bluntly tell us if we only ask. But I'm wondering whether we're actually, all of us, could use a third party, someone from a counseling angle, just as counselors in their work need a second person to go to from time to time, whether that should be the case for Christians in leadership.
I would say yes. I think that one of the things that just for an individual to begin to gauge what actually is going on for them is that looking at the various aspects of their lives and looking at places where there really is deep, meaningful connection, where there's mutuality. It's not just them just pouring out all the time, but they're able to give and to receive. And where are the places where there are gaps? Where are the places where they're leaning so hard into work to try to find a sense of identity? If you're spending an inordinate amount of time beyond the hours that you're allotted to, now sometimes obviously you're in certain kinds of work, whether you're a pastor or you're a CEO, you may have to do more hours than you're contracted to do. But if it goes way beyond an inordinate way that it starts to affect you physically, emotionally, your relationships at home, your relationships with friends, if you're seeing these are red flags that are saying, okay, stop, pay attention. If you're starting to feel some kind of feelings, whether it's that you're feeling really depressed and you don't want to go to work in the morning, whether it's church or whether, you know, you're a doctor, a nurse, an entrepreneur, that's a red flag. If you're angry, you know, and that's a red flag. And so looking internally at your emotions, physically, are you manifesting certain things in your body? You know, is it you now have high blood pressure? You know, suddenly you're pre-diabetic, constant back pain. I mean, there are a number of ways in which our body is also, you know, God created our bodies, and our bodies can really shed some light and make us pay attention to certain things. And so it's pulling back. And I think that and really examining your personhood, your emotions, your body, your lifestyle, your relationships. And I would say the hard part for leaders, it doesn't matter, secular, Christian, leaders working in secular or Christian settings, is to pause, is to take that pause. And so oftentimes, a pastor, getting pastoral care, seeing a therapist, even talking to a friend, is that those are moments to pause and to begin to think about and examine those parts of your life and to look at what's out of order, what needs attending to. Are there places where attachment or disattachment is rearing its head?
Sadly, time has almost defeated us, guys, but I will mention the details of your book. Are there other books that you have found helpful that you would want to recommend?
Yeah, there's a couple I would recommend. Deeply, Rich Velotis is an author in the U.S., and I really like his pastoral style of encouraging people to enter into a more deeply formed life. That's the title of his book. And it looks across a whole range of ways, but it really talks to us about having a way of life that subjects, that allows us to be subjected to the Holy Spirit in all aspects of our life, particularly this internal dimension. If you really want to get more deeply involved in some of the other aspects, Pete Scazzaro's Emotionally Healthy Spirituality, and he has a whole series on this now, is also very, very rigorous around this. And then I would also recommend Diane Langberg, When the Church Harms God's People. Just a long legacy of work. She's a psychologist, long legacy of work of working with victims of church hurts and church abuse too, where we see recovery from the bad effects of really, really bad leadership in terms of that regard. And so, she, in her books and her work, she offers a way out of recovery from some of these effects of these things and ways so that it doesn't even get started. So those are ones that I would recommend.
I would say authors like Dr. Peace Amandi is one, Marlena Graves, The Way Up is Down, and also Dr. Allison Cook. They have multiple books, but they definitely can find them online. But those are ones that speak to formation, but also counseling.
Well, it's been an absolute joy. And I think the insights you bring are going to be such a blessing to many, not just for themselves, but maybe for co-workers that they work with. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having
us. It's been a pleasure.
It was a great joy to chat with Nicholas Rowe and Sheila Wise Rowe about Healing Leadership Trauma. That's the name of their book, Finding Emotional Health and Helping Others Flourish. They also recommended other books, The Deeply Formed Life by Rich Villodas, V-I-L-L-O-D-A-S, The Emotionally Healthy Leader, Peter Scazzaro, S-C-A-Z-Z-E-R-O, and then Diane Lamberg, When the Church Harms God's People, and then other names mentioned, Dr. Peace Amadi, A-M-A-D-I, Marlena Graves, The Way Up is Down, and Dr. Allison Cook, amongst many titles, Boundaries for Your Soul. So if you want to find out more, these are good books, particularly start with, obviously, the Rose book itself, and then explore. But if what we've been talking about has triggered something in you, you need to chat with someone, then do phone Premier's Lifeline, 0300 110 101, 9 till 5 Monday to Friday, if you need to chat with someone. If you need counselling or want to chat with someone, explore that, then waverleyabbeycollege.ac.uk or the Association of Christian Counsellors, which is acc.org.uk. They both have sections on their website, find a counsellor, and you can explore a little bit more if you want to chat with someone about whether you feel that your past is actually affecting your present and particularly the way that you lead. So this is Andy Peck, thanking you for your company and looking forward very much to the next time. Bye for now.
The Leadership Show with Andy Peck. To get in touch, email andy.peck@premier.org.uk.
Been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.